This is the Lattice Training Podcast, where we bring you the best in climbing performance and training from the world's elite athletes, thought leaders, and coaches.
Hello, my name is Mina, and this is the Lattice Training Podcast. And today I'm talking to Emily Harrington. So Emily is a very well-known multidisciplinary athlete. She's a sport climber, a big wall climber, alpine climber, skier, ice climber, and ex-competitive athlete. So she's really kind of been and done a lot of things. She's a very seasoned athlete. She works with the North Face team. So there's lots of amazing, interesting things that we could talk about in this podcast, but we've used this podcast to discuss her recent transition to motherhood with her partner, Adrian Ballinger, and their son, Arrow, who is 14 months at the moment. So we cover a variety of things from the decision to have a child to her experiences with pregnancy and the postpartum period, attitudes to risk, goal setting, and how that's changed for her, as well as things like athletic identity and how that's merged with her identity as a mother. We've talked about her training and have quite a few of her different trips that she's taken and experienced in different ways since becoming a parent. So I hope you enjoy. And here is my chat with Emily Harrington. All right. Hello, Emily.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Psyched to be here.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So first of all, where are you at the moment?
I am in Andermatt, Switzerland. So sort of the Southern Alps on the border with Ticino. And we are here skiing for the month.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. And have you got good snow?
We do, actually. This is the third season we've been here. And last year it was pretty terrible. Europe had a pretty bad snow year. And this year, they're still saying it's subpar, like the locals are, but to us it's all just so fun. Like I love skiing. Yeah. I love skiing in the Alps. It's so different than the US. I compare it more to like big wall climbing instead of like sport climbing or bouldering is like skiing back home in the US. It's just more involved.
That's interesting.
Like it's much more involved. It's a little bit more adventurous. It's still about the skiing, but you kind of have to have other skills in order to get to where you want to go a lot of times. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm not a skier. I have skied, right? But I learned as an adult, I'm definitely not a kind of seasoned skier. So I actually didn't realize the difference there. If anything, I'd have guessed that the mountains and things were bigger in the States because it feels like everything's bigger in North America.
Yeah, no, it's actually completely the opposite. Here, it's way bigger. The lifts take you up way, you know, they're just, all the runs are way longer. And it's just like, it's way more involved. Everything's above tree line here, so it just feels so much bigger and so much more vast. Okay. And the access here is different. You know, they have lifts everywhere and you can get up to the craziest places. And in the US, we don't have that as much.
Yeah, okay. So there's a bit more infrastructure and
way more. And it's, I love both. Like, back home, you know, in order to get to the wild places, you have to walk a really long way and there's generally nobody around. And here, it's like if you're in Chamonix and you're taking the Aiguille de Midi up, you get to the wildest place and you're with, you know, hundreds of other tourists. I kind of love both for different reasons.
I can see that. And did I see on your social media that Arrow has already started skiing?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to call it that, he has kind of slid down a small slope between our legs. And we're kind of just like not trying to keep it fun, obviously not trying to push it. There's a lot of like snacks involved. And he usually skis for like 10 minutes. And it's really just, we just kind of want him to get used to the gear and wearing a helmet and having boots on and all that.
Yeah, the feel of it. Yeah. That's cool. And for reference, you said he's 14 months.
He's 14 months, yeah. And he just started walking.
Nice.
He's not very stable.
That's amazing that he can get used to that so soon. We've done a similar thing, like starting our little one early on a balance bike, and it's amazing
how
quickly they get it.
We have
like,
one of
not
those
that long
too.
After walking.
Totally. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. It's just it's all been so fun kind of introducing him to everything.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. And I mean, I hope it goes without saying that there are so many things that we could talk to you about on a podcast to do with climbing, because you're obviously a multidisciplinary athlete and you're very experienced. And but we really wanted to talk to you, do like a deep dive focus today on the transition to motherhood and everything that comes with that. So obviously Arrow is going to be central to our conversation. He's 14 months old. He's your first child. And I guess it'd be really nice to get some insight from you into, I guess, various different ways that that's impacted yours and Adrian's lives as professional athletes.
Yeah, and it was very interesting because Adrian and I are 10 years apart. He's 10 years older than me.
Okay.
And so I think in a lot of ways, I wasn't as ready as he was. He's been ready maybe for the last few years, and you know, with what he does in his style of climbing and skiing and ski mountaineering, it's a lot higher risk in a lot of ways. And for the last few years, he's just been kind of talking about how he's maybe ready for the next phase of life. He's ready to not take as much risk. He's ready to not be as selfish with his time. And so it's kind of been a conversation for the last few years between us of him being, you know, into his mid-40s and starting to just not push, but say like, I'm ready when you're ready, basically.
Yeah.
And for me, I was, you know, in my early 30s and kind of just like, oh, I don't know if I'm there yet. There's a lot of things I want to do, and just really worried that having a child would kind of take away our ability to do adventures together. It's one of the cornerstones of our relationship is the ability to go out and have fun adventures, the two of us. It's kind of, yeah, it's one of the most important parts of our relationship. And so for me, there was a lot of fear around losing that. And it took me a while to come around to the idea of yeah, just taking that step. It was hard for me. But at the same time, I had a lot of conversations with women who were getting to that age where it was becoming hard to get pregnant. And that was something that started to really stress me out, honestly. I started worrying like, oh no, what if I all of a sudden I decide too late and then I can't get pregnant? And so I think that it's a conversation that's an important one to have, because oftentimes we do skip over that. It's really stressful, especially, you know, for a woman when you get to your mid 30s, it's like you want to have all this life and you want to live all this life before you have a child. And then oftentimes it can feel pretty stressful later on when it's suddenly hard to have a child. And I've had a lot of friends who have encountered that. And so even though I don't think I was totally ready to have a kid, there was this internal struggle and stress that, oh my God, what if I can't get pregnant? And that was sort of when we started trying, is because Adrian was ready. I wasn't totally ready, but I also was like, oh my God, if I want this, I kind of have to go for it, even though I'm not totally ready.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And there's so much uncertainty through the whole thing, isn't there? Like, you don't know, it might take you 2 years to get pregnant. And by that point, you might be ready.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and that was also my idea.
Or it could happen straight away.
Exactly. I was like, oh, it might take us a year. It might take us 2 years. We had all these plans. But I you know, I think luckily for us, I got pregnant right away. But it was also very surprising.
Sure. Yeah, then the reality is like, oh right,
I was like,
doing
oh
this.
I'm supposed to go on an expedition, Adrian's supposed to go on an expedition, like what do we do?
Yeah, of course. And I wanted to ask you about that, and I guess that leads into how pregnancy was for you, because you had that expedition to Baffin Island, didn't you, where you made a beautiful film called Earthside, and the trip looked amazing. But you know, watching it, I was really like, having been pregnant myself, I was like, oh, I wonder what that was like, you know, that inner turmoil. And obviously you talk about that a bit in the film. So it's not like it's sidelined as a topic, but, you know, how was that for you? Cause you were in your first trimester. How did you feel?
Yeah, I was. And it was like, it was actually pretty tumultuous. My first trimester, I had, I think they call it like a subchorionic hemorrhage. So I actually had like a
Okay.
lot of I had a lot of bleeding really early on in my pregnancy, and I thought that I had miscarried. So that was like really traumatic, and I remember actually calling Hillary. I was like, I just had a miscarriage, like I don't, you know, I'm still gonna go on this trip, but you know, I don't know how I feel right now and all these things. And then I actually went to the hospital and they did an ultrasound and they're like, oh no, there's a still a heartbeat. That it's just, you know, and no, again, something no one tells you. And I was like, really? Like, I just thought for sure that that's what just happened. And then it was a little bit high. My pregnancy was a little bit high risk for a few weeks. And so I was actually very much on the fence about whether or not I was going on that trip. And in the end, it turned out to, as the pregnancy progressed, I think I was around like 8 or 9 weeks when they were like, okay, now things look to be totally fine and normal. You're having a normal pregnancy. You should feel, you know, you should feel free to go on this trip if you feel comfortable. And so that was, it was definitely a hard decision to make, but at the same time, it was one that it felt right. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, it felt like a good, it felt very much within my comfort zone. It felt like I was actually feeling relatively okay. I wasn't super sick, luckily, like a lot of women get in their first trimester. I had a little bit of nausea, but otherwise, I felt more or less okay. And I had, you know, one of my close friends, Hillary, who had been on, she basically had been in the same situation as me. She went on an expedition while she was pregnant in her first trimester. And she was like, you can do this if you want, and I will be there. And it's going to be okay. Like, if you want to do this, if you want to go skiing, like, you can take as much or as little risk as you want. She'd been to Baffin Island before on another trip. And so it really was just, it turned out to be this perfect setup for me. And I felt super comfortable going into it.
Oh, that's good. And good that you didn't have too much sickness as well. I kind of wondered watching the film. I was like, is Emily like vomiting off camera in between some of these things, or is she one of the lucky ones? I was one of the lucky ones with my first little boy as well. I wasn't sick.
Yeah, it was, I had a
So I
little
know it's
nausea.
totally possible.
Yeah. I felt, yeah, and I felt quite good in the first trimester, and I just had this like amazing, amazing experience in Baffin with these amazing women, and it really was a very positive, it was a positive thing for me to be able to go out and have that experience and have that trip and kind of figure out where my risk tolerance was at the time. And yeah, it was, it just felt like the stars aligned and I had this perfect adventure before I got too pregnant.
Yeah, and it's nice to have that with some female friends as well, like before you enter this new chapter. And it sounds like you were also like super sensible. And you know, there was a particular line that you talk about in the film called Polar Moon, and you decided not to ski that. So, you know, what were your thoughts around that? Was it just instinct?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just felt like, you know, it was the type of line where those two girls, Christina and Brett, were super stoked on it. And it was kind of their trip that they had planned all along. And they were there to go do first descents. And it, you know, for me, I just wasn't in that place at all. I was definitely like, it was a very like instant, oh, that's like not an objective that I want to be a part of. That's totally for those two girls to go out and kind of crush and have an adventure together. And then Hillary and I were more like, yeah, well, we're just gonna go skiing and keep it chill. I mean, as chill as you can keep it in Baffin, which is still like these massive, gorgeous couloirs that we were skiing. But you know, in terms of risk, it felt very much within my comfort zone.
Oh, nice. And another thing I wanted to ask you about with your pregnancy was that you shared your journey and your kind of continuation of climbing and skiing publicly, I guess through films like that, but also through social media. And how is that? I know as someone that climbs and is also a mother, like I've always been quite nervous about how much I share on social media because I can be quite sensitive and social media can be quite a grisly place. And did you have mostly positive interactions, or was it a bit of a mixed bag?
Yeah, I I had mostly really positive interactions. I think the thing about it is, and I suppose you kind of adjust to this the more you share and the more, you know, in the public eye you become, but it's like you could have 100 positive supportive comments, but that one negative one is what kind of digs in, and kind of that's the one that stings, and that's the one that you feel. And I've had a couple experiences like that, but there is a perspective there. You kind of have to go back and remember, like, okay, actually most people are super supportive, and I get a lot of messages from women kind of telling me how important it was to see like both sides and see that I continued to climb, and, you know, to talk about it and kind of explain what I was going through. I think that that part should be more important to me than the random kind of, in some ways, like ignorant comment of you're being irresponsible, or you're endangering your unborn child, or stuff like that. Like, I have learned to kind of let it roll off my back, but it's taken a while. Yeah. And I do have like a, you know, I do have like a rule now. And that is, like, a lot of times I just don't read comments, like on YouTube or whatever it is. I just try not to read them, because, you know, it also takes a lot of time.
I was going to say, that apart from anything else, it's probably when you have a big audience, it's like super time consuming if you read everything.
Yeah. I try not to anymore.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you have to be kind of strong in your own decisions and, you know, where you've drawn certain lines. And there's so much context that goes with it. You know, people that don't climb, for example, even don't climb at all, will see things and be like horrified. But it's really hard to have that context of like how easy something is for a professional athlete to do.
Yeah.
You know, I used the analogy once of someone. I was like, I'm like a runner that's going for a walk, trying to explain, you know, like top roping in a pregnancy harness when you're like 36 weeks, and people are like, you're rock climbing. And you're like, well, I'm kind of, it's like walking on the pavement, sort of, really,
yeah,
in terms of like risk level.
Totally. Exactly. Like that. Exactly. And I had, like, thankfully, living in Tahoe, it's just a very active place, and a lot of pregnant women ski. I mean, I skied probably 5 times before I gave birth, and I was in my third trimester. And so a lot of times, you know, my doctor was very familiar with skiing and would kind of be like, oh, well, like, you know, if it's anything like skiing, I think that it's probably totally fine if you're well within your comfort zone and all of that. So, you know, I tried to listen to the professionals, and in most cases, my OB was very supportive of my decision making around, you know, continuing activity.
That's nice. Yeah, that's cool to have someone there with that medical background that also gets your sporting background. Is really cool. And so then moving into kind of postpartum, I mean, it'd be interesting to hear what kind of birth experience you had, if you're kind of happy to talk about that, because it gives us a bit of a context into how your kind of initial postpartum period and like return to climbing was. Did you have a kind of straightforward birth experience?
Yeah, I had a pretty straightforward birth experience. I was a week and a day late. So I was actually induced, which was not the most pleasant experience. everything went very quickly as soon as I was induced. I think my entire labor experience was 6 hours. So it all happened very fast. But as a result, it was like really, it was like from 0 to 100, like incredibly, incredibly painful. But other than that, it was a very normal birth experience. I did have some tearing, so I had stitches. But otherwise it was pretty just, you know, I don't know, basic average birth experience.
Yeah.
Very
sure.
Average size sure, baby.
Sure. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Cool. And so when you returned to kind of like that initial postpartum period, what did that look like for you in terms of like returning to climbing and also skiing and things like that? Was there like a long period of time where you were just focused on kind of the basics of recovery before going back to sports specific stuff, or did you go back quite quickly? How did that look like? What did that look like for you?
I mean, I tried to be patient and I tried to, you know, be gentle with myself, but I did get back fairly quickly. I got back to climbing within a few weeks, just pretty mellow, what I would consider mellow climbing. And then skiing, we actually had the best season of snow. Like, basically my Aero was born and it just started snowing in Tahoe and it like didn't stop snowing, and it was essentially like the biggest winter of our lives. And so there was a lot of stoke around skiing and I definitely pushed it on that front. I went skiing, I think, like 10 days after giving birth. And it was,
whoa.
Yeah, it was like, yeah. You know, and granted, it was like pretty mellow, you know, it was relatively mellow, relatively shorter days, but I did get back really quickly. And that's actually where I got the most negativity on social media and all of that from other moms and other women, was like, you're going back too fast. Like, you're going to ruin your uterus. Like, all of these, like, again, just like random things that were a little bit insulting. And that was kind of the hardest, honestly, with people telling me that I like shouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And I was like, I'm just trying to, you know, feel sane and like do my thing. And I have a baby and I'm just figuring it out. Just like everyone else.
Yeah,
that was an interesting one, actually. I got a lot of negativity for like climbing too soon or skiing too soon, all of those things. But, you know, ultimately,
got to do what feels good. It's that side of things that you got more criticism.
Yeah, it was. It was surprising. I think that's why it affected me, is I was a little caught off guard because I was like, wait a minute. Like, why is everyone telling me what I should be doing? After I have a baby.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know. I think there's this I get it. Like, I actually kind of get it. I think there's a whole, like, getting back to, you know, getting back and getting your body back. And there's, like, this whole, you know, culture behind that. And maybe I think there's this idea that as, you know, female professional athletes, like, coming back really soon perpetuates that ideal and puts pressure on women and all of that. But I was just trying to do what felt good, and I'm naturally someone who's going to push it.
yeah, and also I think as a community we have to understand that there's a range of experiences, there's a range of birth experiences, there's a range of postpartum experiences, and all of those things, and there's so much complexity that goes into how you feel postpartum, that there is going to be this range of when people go back and when people feel safe and comfortable going back.
Yeah,
and
it absolutely
should, it should be acceptable at either extreme of that, really.
It
and
should
anywhere in the
yeah
middle.
Yeah, but I'm yeah and but I do kind of understand, like, if you had a really traumatic birth and it was really hard postpartum physically to get back, I think that there can be some sort of like, put, you know, a little bit of, I don't know what the word is, like resentment, or kind of like a little bit of, yeah, just kind of feeling shitty when you see other women kind of getting back at it really quickly. I think because there is such a wide range of experiences and it is so emotional and you're kind of going through so much, I think that when you're struggling, it can be hard, you know, to see on social media when it looks like someone is having an easy time, which, you know, it wasn't easy. Nothing is, it's not easy raising a child and having a newborn and being postpartum. But sometimes I think you can kind of gather that from that tiny little sliver of social media that you see.
Yeah, it's that classic Instagram highlights issue, isn't it? That we don't see the full picture.
Which maybe I could have done a better job of telling the full picture. But I didn't feel terrible after giving birth. Like, I was more or less just, I think, middle of the road normal.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you a bit about body image, because you've openly discussed kind of body image previously on podcasts, and of course there was the film Light, directed by Caroline Treadway, that you took part in, and how did that kind of history of feelings and behaviors interact with your experience postpartum? Because obviously it's a time of like huge bodily change. I mean, I remember after my son, I was like, oh, I still look 6 months pregnant, but there's no baby in there anymore. And things change really rapidly. But, you know, I certainly felt like my body was really alien to me. And there was certainly a bit of like, whoa, what's going on here? And what does the future look like?
Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. I thankfully had this little crew of women who were going through it pretty much at the same time as me, they were 6 months ahead of me. And we have this little WhatsApp group that we were kind of chatting on. And it was really helpful to have that support to be able to talk about those things, to be able to be really vulnerable and be like, my body feels totally different. I don't know if it's ever going to be back to how it was before. I miss it. I'm really struggling. And it was just kind of, it was hard. It was really hard. I think as an athlete, it's really hard to kind of, even though, you can say all the right things, like female bodies are amazing and we are amazing and we do amazing things and postpartum is this amazing time, but multiple things can be true at once. It was this beautiful, magical time, but it was also really hard emotionally and physically, and just hard to feel not like myself. And I think one thing that I really underestimated was the whole like breastfeeding process and how hard that would be and how taxing and how time consuming and how sort of like trapped I would feel by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in those early days where it can be like, periods of cluster feeding and just, it can feel like you say, a mixture of this amazing bonding experience and just like overwhelming at the same time.
Totally overwhelming. And so much. It's so much. I really underestimated it.
Yeah. And actually, you mentioned on social media that you stopped breastfeeding quite recently. Was it November 2020?
Yeah, I think recently. End of October, was when it was kind of, it just natural. I wanted to go a whole year, but Arrow was kind of not as into it anymore. And it was, getting to the point where I just wasn't breastfeeding him very often. It was like maybe a few minutes every day. And it just kind of naturally tapered off, which I think was, again, like a very, a very fortunate process. Like we were both sort of over it. It totally changed everything. My body changed. My brain changed. Like my energy levels changed. Everything shifted. And it was kind of crazy because I kind of just had accepted that I almost didn't remember what it was like to not be pregnant or postpartum or breastfeeding. It's kind of like 2 years. And I didn't realize how tired I was and how much energy I was expending. And it was just this crazy realization of, oh my God, like I kind of feel like I used to feel, I think, but that was so long ago.
Yeah, it's like you're recognizing this old version of yourself or your energy levels that suddenly comes so knocking funny. And you're like, oh, that was missing.
I didn't even remember that that was missing. I just thought this is how I am. Like, this is who I am. This is what it's going to be like. And then as soon as I stopped, I think all women have a very different experience with breastfeeding and with stopping breastfeeding. And for me, it was this dramatic shift.
Yeah, I've certainly heard that, and that there can be quite an emotional like come down almost as well from the kind of hormonal changes.
Yeah, and I didn't experience that, but I've had friends that were like really terrified to stop breastfeeding because they got so much serotonin from the act of actually breastfeeding. But that wasn't me. When I quit, it was just like, I just felt like I had more energy and I felt like I had my body back in a way.
Oh, it's so interesting. It's amazing how such a kind of like a biological process can be so varied for different people. Just like some women are like horrifically sick for 9 months when they're pregnant and some women feel great. You'd think that there would be a bit more like
consistency,
like of a standard experience. Yeah. Which totally. Makes the and whole I guess, thing really yeah. hard because you it don't know what you're committing to.
You don't know what you're going to get. And then you don't know what kind of kid you're get, like what kind of infant or newborn you're going to have. And I think that's why, that's the biggest lesson I've learned, is you cannot compare what you're going through to what anyone else is going through or what they will go through. Or if you have another and go through a second pregnancy, that also could be completely different than the first. So I think the biggest lesson I learned through all of this is to just never compare. Like, your experience is going to be totally unique to you, and it's going to be beautiful and amazing, but it's also going to be really hard and really emotional. No matter what happens, it's always going to be all the things, and it's going to be your unique experience.
Yeah, and that you can't always figure it out. And I think that kind of translates into parenting as well. Like, you can't always figure out the reason that they didn't sleep well that night and then they slept well the next night, or whatever it is, or the reason you're feeling sick or you're not feeling sick. Like, sometimes you just have to kind of play the cards you're dealt. But it makes, you know, you think, I've certainly found it's made me quite more responsive than kind of a planner. Like, I think I used to like to kind of like have a schedule and a plan, and like, you know, I knew what I was doing and why I was doing it and how it would be. Whereas now I feel like I'm way more responsive to my environment because that actually just works better.
Yeah, you're more adaptable and resilient because you'd have no choice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's slowly like steamroll it out of you.
Yeah, and like, I think it's quite cool, actually, because you can go into it with, I think I've gotten rid of a lot of bad habits, actually, through parenting and pregnancy and motherhood, because I just think, I like you, I was a planner, and if things didn't go my way, it was really hard, and I was really hard on myself, and I really struggled, and I was a total perfectionist, and you just can't, it's just way too hard to be that way when you have a kid.
Mm.
You have to be adaptable. You have to be flexible. You can't, nothing is ever going to go the way that you want it to. And therefore that like perfectionism, that obsession with having everything go as planned and being super bummed when it doesn't, you just get practice with things not working out. And then you kind of learn how to go with the flow. And I think that that's helped me a lot mentally in all aspects of my life now.
No, I can see that. And it probably really changes the way that you set goals, I imagine. Has it changed? Like, have your goals in climbing kind of changed a lot since being a mother? And if so, how have they changed?
Yeah. So that was a struggle that I had last year, was I had this whole plan of, I'm going to get back, I'm going to start training really hard, and I'm going to go back to Yosemite, and I'm going to try to free climb El Cap, and it's going to be like this whole thing. I'm going to come back. And I went to Yosemite, and I was actually terrified. I didn't want to be up high. I didn't want to be in exposed places. I just felt scared, and like this very visceral feeling of, I do not want to be there. And I've never had that before with like, I mean, I've had it before, like in the mountains and things like that. Like, I don't want to take this level of risk. And in my mind, it's not that risky climbing up there. But for some reason, it was just this feeling of, this isn't what I want to be doing. I really can't. I really don't think I can emotionally handle it. And it was a good realization of, oh, I can listen to that. I can listen to what I actually feel, what I feel is true for me. And I can shift, and I can come up with a different goal, something that's more motivating. And so my goals have changed. And, you know, I think right now I'm more excited to be sport climbing and be trying to get stronger and, you know, work on my strength and all of those things that are just a little bit less mentally taxing than climbing on a big wall in an exposed place. Or, you know, my skiing is, I'm starting to feel a little bit better about taking risk and thinking about it. Whereas before, I think it was this very emotional response of like, I don't want to take any risk. I want everything to be mellow. I don't want, you know, I don't want to be scared at all. I don't want to be worried. And so it's gotten a little bit better. I'm a little bit more open to going back and climbing big walls. But last year, it was really hard for me to feel like I should be ready and I'm back and really not actually wanting to be there. And I think over the last year, I've learned to kind of listen to that voice and adapt and be a little bit more nimble. And it's helped me kind of realize what I actually want out of climbing. And I think it's a much more, genuine approach.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you kind of have, do you feel like you had any insight into those feelings before you got to the valley? Or was it literally like you started climbing and it was a bit of a shock that you were like, oh, wow, this isn't.
I had the feeling. I think the other thing is logistically, it was really tough. And I'm starting to realize that, like, I need things to be a little logistically easier in order to be able to focus and be able to try. And I think I was really worried going into Yosemite about the logistics of childcare and being away. And I was still breastfeeding. So it was like, oh my God, how do I have to bring a pump on the wall? What am I going to do? Like, there was all these things that were like stressing me out. And then I got there and I realized I don't even want to be up on the wall. Like, it's too much. And I don't know. I think it was a combination of being stressed about the logistics and then also just actually not wanting to do that kind of climbing. And so, I've definitely like shifted. It took me going there to kind of realize. And then it took me not beating myself up about it and being like, okay, well, I needed to go there and kind of work through it and realize that it's not where I wanted to be and then reset and come up with new goals that were a little bit, mellower and a little bit logistically less challenging, because Yosemite is just such a hard place to exist anyway.
Even without a child. You definitely see, or I certainly see, a lot of new parents bouldering a lot, especially in like the first year. I certainly did. I mean, I bouldered anyway before, but I was kind of more in a sport climbing kind of groove. And then as soon as I had Isaac, I was like, bouldering is nice and easy. Not easy as in the climbing's not easy, but like the logistics are easier, right? Has that been something that you guys have done or are interested in? I don't feel like I've seen much bouldering stuff.
Well, no. And I think you. I really need help, Mina, because I thought that bouldering would be really easy with a baby. I was like convinced that this would be my time to be a boulderer. And yes, we got sucked into sport climbing like pretty much right away because we had a third. We're super fortunate to have a nanny who is a climber who comes climbing with us and either helps take care of Arrow or is like a belayer, and we climb in a three, and it's pretty nice. It's pretty tight, like we're pretty dialed. But Adrian left, he went on a ski trip in January, and I was in Vegas and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go bouldering. And I don't think I've got it figured out because it felt so much harder to me than going sport climbing. Like, I had so much stuff. I was carrying so much stuff. And then, like, a lot of times when you go sport climbing, maybe I'm just not tailoring the experience well enough, because a lot of times when I go sport climbing, I pick a spot that's, like, got a lot of flat ground and there's, like, sometimes a nice cave for him to nap and you kind of stay in one place the whole time. And with bouldering, we were just, like, moving from one boulder to the next, and I had all this stuff, and then the ground was super uneven, so Arrow couldn't like be crawling around because he was gonna like fall between two boulders. And by the end of the day, like, I felt like I had been on an expedition. Like, I carried all this stuff. I was so tired from carrying carrying pads and carrying all this stuff and carrying him, that I was like, bouldering is not easy. I don't understand how it's easier.
I guess it depends a lot on the venue actually as well.
Like,
we've done
lot
of trips to Font where it's quite flat. The walk-ins are pretty chill, flat, prammable. Like, we've got one of those off-road prams. So when he was younger, we could just, you know, and we could stick loads of other stuff in the pram, in like the storage of the pram. And, you know, so you'd have pads on your back and then you'd roll this pram in, and then we would basically, but we would still, you know, rather than going from one boulder to the next, to the next, to the next, we would, like, I would have a project and David, my husband, would have a project, and we would maybe go to his in the morning And I would play with Isaac, and then Isaac would have a nap in the afternoon, and I would climb. We'd have gone to my project, timed going to my project with his nap,
right,
because it was always a bit easier mentally for me to climb when he was sleeping.
Yeah.
Whereas David found it, he could like double
separate, yeah.
Yeah, he could like separate a bit more, and whereas I found it like if he was awake or like I was really distracted.
That was another thing with bouldering. Yeah, I felt like with bouldering I was more distracted when he was awake. I don't know why. I guess because I felt like I could tend to him because I could just step
you're
off
down
the boulder.
On the ground, aren't you?
Whereas if you're like sport climbing and just kind of let it all go. But I think I'm just so used to sport climbing and it's very comfortable for me. But I also just think Fontainebleau is easy with kids. It's not necessarily bouldering.
Yeah. You might be right.
I think that's what I learned. Right.
Yeah, not all. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to go to like upper chaos, are you, with a
no.
toddler?
No. But we are.
I'm sure people do, right? But it's not an easy choice.
We are supposed to go to Rocklands this July. And I've never been before.
Nice.
And I'm excited, I think. I do think I've heard there's like quite a bit of hiking and stuff, but we'll figure it out. And we're going to be with Paige Clausen and her husband, and they're pretty dialed. So I think it'll be like a good family experience.
Yeah.
I'm trying to set my expectations
to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the walks there from my experience, I haven't been for a few years, so I haven't been to quite a few of the newer areas, but the kind of quite established areas, although they may have longer, like semi-long hikes, they're not super steep or kind of strenuous ones.
Yeah, good. I just need to figure out my system. Like we figured out sport climbing, and I think I just need to dial in my bouldering systems.
Yeah. And does Aaron still sleep in the day a couple of naps? Or because I think that's
he does,
key for
yeah.
me was like timing it with Isaac's sleep.
He does one nap a day. But he's not a great napper. He's a great night sleeper. Mm.
Okay.
And then during the day, it's a little bit hit or miss. Like if we're at home, he's way better. Out at the crag, he'll sometimes nap for an hour. But like, again, the day we went bouldering, see, this is my one anecdotal experience. He refused to take a nap the whole day. It was the one day in his entire life he just didn't nap. And that's why I was like, bouldering doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's too stimulating.
Yeah.
I guess that's part and parcel, isn't it, of being a parent, is that they're also different, but they're also changing. You know, you get used to one set of like almost like child rules of like this is how they operate. And just as you get used to it, they're like, oh, I'm going to drop that nap, or, you know,
totally.
I don't do this anymore.
They're going to change. Yeah.
So flexible.
Totally. And we've had this whole like our like parenting philosophy is that he has to be like resilient. And so we're trying to like kind of roll with it. And, you know, even though he doesn't nap, like we're still going to bring him climbing. Like we're still going to, we took him to Nepal on a trek and we were like, he's going to sleep in a tent in a down suit and he's going to figure it out. And maybe he doesn't sleep as well, but it's all going to be okay. So our whole thing is like, he's going to be resilient no matter what.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that. How was that? Because that seemed like quite a big undertaking with a young child.
It was a big undertaking. I think I went into it with, I set my expectations. I was like, this could be a nightmare. Like we've never done, you know, cause it's two from the US, it's two quite long flights and we'd only ever done one like overnight flight. So that kind of worked out, you know, and then the flights where they're like awake for 10 hours are kind of the ones where it's a nightmare the whole time because you can't entertain them for 10 hours. And so I was just really stressed about the travel, and then I was stressed about him getting sick, and then I was stressed about altitude, and I just had all these, but then I just decided that I was gonna just go with the flow, and whatever happens, he's gonna be fine, we're all gonna be fine, we might just be really tired. And I went into it with those types of expectations, like it's going to be really hard, but we're going to figure it out. And it actually turned out way, way, way easier than I thought. He was much more adaptable than I thought he would be. And we had spoken to a pediatrician about, you know, signs of altitude sickness in, you know, non-communicative children. And you know, so we had all the, we were really prepared, and we kind of knew what we were in for. And I think he did, in all honesty, like, he did better than we did at altitude in a lot of ways. He was like, he just seemed like he was kind of thriving, and it was pretty amazing, actually. It was a trip that I will always cherish, I think, because it did, it was just so much easier and more magical than I thought it could ever be. And that was really amazing. Special. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, that's so cool. Because it's so easy really to not do these things. It's so it easy is. To just be like, it's
easy
too
to be
hard.
Like, oh, it's too hard. Yeah. And the cool thing was, like, I also witnessed a much different, like, experience with child rearing. So, like, you know, in our culture, I feel like it's just primarily on the parents to take care of the child. And then we got to Nepal, and we had, you know, Adrian's company has been employing a Sherpa team there for decades at this point, and we're very close with all of them. They're very much like family, and they essentially, like, took Arrow the minute we got there and just took care of him, like, the whole time, like, as this, like, very communal experience. You know, they, like, didn't even ask. They just, like, changed his diaper and, you know, took him into the kitchen, and we're just, like, it was very much like a communal experience of raising a child, you know. And a lot of times, a lot of cultures, it'd just be like, oh, he has a dirty diaper, and give him back to the parents to deal with it, or, oh, he's crying. And they just kind of, you know, they just kind of took care of him. And it was really cool to see. And it was really cool to see how he shifted from being having a little bit of stranger danger and always wanting to be with us and being really stressed about being away from us. By the end of the trip, he was just totally fine not being with us. And, you know, it was really cool. And it was a fun experience too, because we got to relax a little bit more because we weren't always having to take care of him.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And does that kind of experience make you feel more relaxed about doing longer trips away from him or expeditions as he gets older?
Yeah, I think I'm still not quite ready to do, like, a big long. I'm going to do a 2-week trip coming up, which that'll be the longest time I'm away from him. And we just did, like, 5 days. I just did 5 days. And we left him with my parents, which totally stressed me out going into it. Because, again, I think there's this idea that, like, your kid needs things to be a certain way, and you do things a certain way. Like, he needs to nap at a certain time, and this certain, you know, in his crib, and, you know, everything's kind of, like, regimented. Like, you just get into a routine with your child. And I was just stressed. I was like, oh my God, my parents are going to take him out to a restaurant for every meal, and they're going to, like, he's not going to nap on time, and he's going to only eat French fries, and, like, all of these stresses. And that probably happened. And then he was fine, and it was awesome. And they loved it, and he loved it, and he was great. And so, yes, having those experiences does kind of ease my stress about it. And I think it's gotten a lot easier. In the beginning, it was hard to leave him. I didn't think I would be that kind of parent. Like, I thought I'd be totally fine leaving my kid. I was kind of scheming ways to, like, take trips when I was breastfeeding and all of that. And then once he was born, I was, like, really, really attached to him. And so it's been a process, and it's been quite hard for me to want to take trips away from him. But I think it's good for – I do think it's good for both of us. And these experiences have helped me a lot, sort of, like, let go and have a little bit more trust in others.
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? I remember thinking the same before I had a child, that it would be – I would be, like, totally happy with just, like, going away on a climbing trip for a week or something. And to find yourself not wanting to do those things is a strange kind of dynamic. And
it's so weird, isn't it?
Certainly sat strangely with my identity, because I was like, but this is what I do. Like, I disappear off on climbing trips. And yeah. I was just like, but I feel like I can't admit to the fact that I don't want to go.
Totally. I mean, yeah, even last year we came, here to Switzerland last year, and I had trouble like going skiing for the day because I just didn't want to be away from him. I would have to come all the way down to the town for lunch so that I could see him and just know that he was okay and like kind of like feel that I was with him. And it was really, yeah, it was hard and it was really confusing because I just have never known myself to be that way. And I think I've kind of come to terms with it and gotten, I think the more I've learned to accept it, actually the better I've gotten at like taking those little smaller steps to, you know, having space from him and having some time for myself.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and you build up that kind of tolerance or like that knowing yeah. of what you can, what's fun and what's not fun anymore. And like, you know, is this amount of yeah. time, this amount of time feels good. This amount of time actually doesn't feel good. And I didn't want to be there for the last 3 days. I wish I'd come home a bit earlier or whatever. And that, like you said, that all changes over time. But it's another point at which you need to just be adaptable.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it sounds like you're doing a great job of figuring it all out.
You know, day by day. And like you said, it changes. Day by day.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. And do you see your goals being different over the next few years as Arrow gets older? Like, do you think stuff like, you know, like the trip to Yosemite that just like didn't feel like it was right or the right time? Do you think that stuff will come back into focus or do you think it'll stay how it is for a while?
I do. I think it will come back into focus. Again, I think it's because I kind of have accepted where I'm at and I've accepted that I need to be a little more patient with myself. And then I think those feelings are allowed to kind of, that motivation is allowed to come back at a pace that's more appropriate for me. You know, instead of like pushing and trying to force myself into a goal or a mindset that I'm really not feeling, I'm like accepted the place that I'm at right now and kind of shifted my goals and decided to do things that are a little bit, you know, as soon as I did that, as soon as I started like focusing on other things that were a little bit easier, a little bit logistically simpler, I've started thinking like, oh, okay, now I think I could be ready for this in the next like 6 months or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not, I'm totally okay with it. Like, I'm totally okay if I'm not in that place. But there is that fire that's starting to kind of, like, instead of this dread, like, I had a lot of dread going into Yosemite. A lot of, like, feelings of, you know, just reluctance. And I don't have that as much anymore because it's, like, I've given myself the freedom to not do it, essentially.
Yeah.
And I think when you give yourself the freedom to kind of do what feels right and what feels true for you, then it leaves some space for those types of more positive, motivating feelings to come back. And I think that's where I'm at right now, which is really nice. I had like some ideas for goals this spring, and then I ultimately decided that I want to stick around Las Vegas, which is where we have like a little piece of land, and go sport climbing for a bit. But I am going to take a little side trip to Yosemite just for a long weekend. And so, you know, it's a compromise.
Yeah, you're like mixing things up a little bit, like testing the water again.
Exactly. Yeah. But not like diving headfirst into the deep end.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure. And I guess with like risk management, there'll be some things that in early motherhood, like perhaps, you know, your comfort zone gets smaller and then that some areas of risk will gradually expand as, like you said, the fire comes back and you start to feel more comfortable with this new identity and this kind of identity merge. But then there might also be some elements of risk management that just have fundamentally changed now you're a parent. And I guess it's differentiating between those things. Like, what are the things that are maybe not going to change and that just feel different now versus the things that will slowly kind of re-expand?
Yeah. I think that line is always changing, right? Like, I don't know. A year ago here in Switzerland, I was just like, I don't want to do anything that has any level of risk. I just, not even like the smallest chance. Like, I just can't handle it. Maybe I'll never be able to handle it. And I started to accept that. Like, maybe I'll never be able to do that. Maybe I won't. And that's okay. But now that we're back this year, it's shifting again. And I do feel okay with taking a certain level of risk as long as it's very well thought out. Like today, actually, we had a really amazing day of skiing where Adrian and I worked together really well and we communicated a lot. And but we did some things that were like, I wouldn't say dangerous, but I would say things that kind of scared us a little bit. Or like, you know, they give you that feeling of like, okay, I'm not like doing something reckless, but we're doing things that aren't just super we're not staying super mellow, and it's because
it has a calculated risk attached to it.
We're really calculated and we're talking a lot about what we want to do and how we want to do it. And last year it just wasn't it wasn't even in my mind that I could be skiing what we did today. But today it felt really good. I think I had like I was thinking a lot about it today. I was like, I am actually quite confident in the conditions and I'm quite confident in myself and we're making really good decisions and we're kind of looking at all of the information. And it really felt good today, even though there was like a tiny little element of fear. It was a nice place to be in. It was a nice place to be like talking about risk instead of before I was just like, I don't even want to talk about it. I want nothing to do with it. It's too scary. I'm too scared. I'll never want to do this again, you know? And it's definitely shifted. Yeah. And so who knows? I think that both Adrian and I talk a lot more about the risks we take and whether or not they're worth it. And I think that we will not eliminate risk from our lives because we have a kid now. But I think that we will be very, very selective about the risks that we take.
Yeah. That seems to make a lot of sense. And does that, I wanted to ask you also about him, about Adrian and his work and his, you know, all the expeditions he goes on. Presumably he still goes away for some periods of time and his work kind of inevitably comes with some risk. And how does he manage that as a new father?
Yeah. And I would say he has kind of the tougher job in terms of the risk and how it relates to his career and parenthood. I think what he does just inherently entails more objective hazard. And so we talk a lot about it, and he hasn't been ready in the last year. He's not ready this year to do anything that's that risky. He's going to go to Everest this year and guide, which, you know, in our world feels relatively, you know, it doesn't feel that risky, honestly. Like guiding Everest, using oxygen, like that's something that is, we're both very comfortable with. It's just a long time away, which is, I think, hard. But he's definitely starting to talk again about wanting to do something that's a little bit more, you know, a little bit more of a personal goal. So that would entail more risk, skiing a bigger peak. But maybe not this year, maybe next year, stuff like that, is definitely still on his mind, but we're still in this phase of like, he's still not sure. He's not sure if that's something that he still wants to do, if he really, really wants it, or if he doesn't really need it. And if he's totally happy just raising arrow and, you know, guiding and doing things that are well within his risk profile and his risk tolerance. It's something that we just like talk about all the time. And it's definitely a question mark, I would say, as to whether or not he is going to be ready to take that, you know, level of risk again. I think for sure he's in a different place than he was, you know, in his 20s. And when he was just, you know, really pushing it in terms of like mountaineering and ski mountaineering and all that, I think it's totally changed and he's very comfortable with that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I feel like we don't often hear from fathers as much in the kind of discussion of parenthood and climbing. And we're always interested to hear how they're handling their kind of respective kind of roles, especially when it comes to professional athletes and and things that involve long time away and risk and things like that. So it sounds like you guys have a really good dialogue around it all.
Yeah, we're trying to talk about it a lot. I do think like there's something biological in women that kind of automatically makes you step back and like refrain from taking risk. I don't know. It just, it's like, I feel like something shifted like chemically in me. And I'm not sure that that happens to men as much. So I think maybe that could be like, I don't know, maybe that's not true, but it just feels that way to me. Like I felt a very dramatic shift, like in my body about toward risk. And I think for him, it was just like a much more gradual thing. And maybe just came with age, honestly, and with like losing people in the mountains and realizing, oh, that's like, this isn't what I really want. This isn't what I care about as much anymore. And kind of why, I think it's kind of why he was ready to have a kid 5 years ago, is he was kind of like, okay, I'm good. I've done a lot of things that I want to do and I feel good about it and I want to be around.
Yeah, no, I can see that, definitely. And to shift just a little bit the conversation, you obviously train with Lattice, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about kind of training and how that fits into all of this, and kind of separately to motherhood, like how do you focus your training when you do so many disciplines of, like, you do lots of disciplines within climbing, but you also then are a high-level skier, and then you go away on trips quite a lot. Like, how does training fit into that picture for you?
Yeah, it's always been a struggle of mine to kind of balance all the training and to balance training and my goals in rock climbing, because rock climbing is always kind of my number one passion and it's what I love to do most and I want to excel at it. You know, but that said, I love skiing as well. And I'm married to a professional skier and mountain guide and someone who cares deeply about going skiing. And it's a big part of our relationship. And it's something we do together. It's one of those like adventures that we do together. And so it is super important that we take trips like this and we get to go on bigger ski trips. And it's kind of like, you know, I get my time and he gets his time. And so it's very much like how we compromise and how we operate as a family. Mm-hmm. And it's always been a big struggle for me. It's always been really hard for me to structure my training and kind of understand what I need to be doing. And honestly, it's always been hard for me to not overdo it. You know, I'm someone who will like go skiing and then I'll go to the gym and try to do a million different things and in a gym session and then ski the next day. And then, you know, I've always just not been good at like resting and recovery and all of that. And I think that's where like Lattice has helped me so much, is it's given me permission to like not do as much all the time. And I think that's been the biggest thing. And it's given me a structure and some consistency. And kind of this idea that like I have a plan and I can stick to the plan and I don't have to always do more. Like that's what I've always been guilty of, is like doing too much all the time. And then I kind of crash and burn. And I'm lucky that I haven't really been that injured. But it's just been so helpful to tell Maddie, like, okay, I'm going on a ski trip for a month and I'm going to be able to go to the gym once a week, but then I'm going to have a hangboard. And then she writes this plan and I can feel really good about like doing the 30-minute hangboard workout at the end of a ski day twice a week, and like knowing that I'm staying consistent. That's just really helped me, I think, mentally and emotionally. And then physically, I do feel much better, I think, because I'm not overtraining, I think.
Yeah.
And I do love, I believe that like me not focusing on rock climbing 12 months a year has been really beneficial for me. I do think that that's why I am still climbing today. And I think it's why I have not had any like dramatic injuries. And I think it's helped my motivation a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that it's like a balance, isn't it? Of like doing your sport enough to feel satisfied that you're doing the thing mm-hmm. that you love enough, and also seeing that progression versus like diversifying and keeping your body intact. Yeah. Especially when you throw in like pregnancy and postpartum and like, you know, having a kid and everything that goes with that. Did you start training? Like when did like postpartum kind of rehab turn into training for you? Like, because I think I certainly remember from having my son that there was a time when I was like, I'm rehabbing. And then there was suddenly a moment where I was like, I think I'm training. Like, yeah. This feels like training again.
Yeah, it's so funny because I actually wrote Maddie about lattice training, like, I think like 3 months postpartum or maybe even 2 months postpartum. And she was like, you need to, she's like, you should wait a few more months before you kind of start training, and you should just do what you do normally and like, you know, climb. And but she was basically like, you need to rehab. And I was like, okay, cool. That's good advice. Because I really wanted to like dive back in and start training. And, you know, I was really anxious and motivated. But I didn't start, I don't think, really training until maybe April of last year. So that was like 5 months postpartum, 5-ish months. And it was quite hard at first. I felt pretty terrible. I felt pretty weak. But I actually, it was kind of nice because I've always been really afraid to do lattice because I was afraid of the assessment and how, like, how hard it would be for my ego. And then with postpartum, it was kind of like, oh, I'm like starting from zero. I know that, like, it's a clean slate. I don't have to be like stressed about the fact that I'm pretty much shit at everything, which I was. And it kind of felt nice to be like, okay, we're starting fresh here, and kind of just having no ego involved. And it's been a really positive experience. And honestly, it's been kind of funny because I feel stronger than I have maybe ever. And it's totally weird.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Yeah.
It's like, that's really cool. And I'm just using like, you know, like board climbing, it's about the only like measurement I can use. Because, you know, we've all been board climbing at this point for however many years. And I'm now like sending things on the boards that I've never been able to do before. And so I think it's working.
That's amazing. That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, it feels really good. It's been really fun and really motivating. And I think another part of it is like, before I had Arrow, I had so much time to go climbing, and I basically took it for granted, and I could climb all the time. And I think having a child like gave me this focus and this appreciation for even like getting to go train for an hour. And I'm very deliberate, and I'm very like, okay, this is my hour, it's my time, and I really enjoy it. Like, I really love it. And before, it was a little bit more, you know, like wishy-washy, maybe I wasn't as motivated. Now it's like, that time is precious, and I'm going to use it well. And I think that's also shifted. I'm much more deliberate about my time.
Yeah. And it's probably much higher quality time as well, like you say, because you're doing less volume.
Totally.
So when you do go, you're probably maybe not as rested in some ways, like sleep-wise and stuff, but
for
like
sure,
more rested from the sport itself. And so you get these kind of like high quality injections.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's part of it for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's a real struggle to do that when you're not forced into it. And I think being a parent often forces that kind of structure a little bit more, which depending on where your weaknesses lie can be really good. You know, like if to improve actually what, you know, if you're super strong fingers, super strong everything, and actually what you need is endurance, that might be harder to fit in because it's a bit more time consuming. But
I'm the opposite actually. So that it's been great. And I've never been able to focus on like pure strength because I was always climbing all the time because I needed to climb all the time because that was what I did. And now I don't have the time to climb all the time. So I just have really focused like quality sessions. And I think that's changed a lot in my climbing.
Oh, that's really interesting to hear. And do you feel when you say go sport climbing, like you, does that translate, you know, you're saying you can do stuff on the board that you couldn't do before. Are you finding that like crux sections of roots are feeling easier? Is it translating that way?
Yeah, it is translating that way. I mean, I had one project this winter that I was successful on, and I thought it might be like a multi-season project, and I just kind of went up and did all the moves, and then like 3 days later I just one hung it, and I was like, oh, okay, like this is going faster than I thought it was. And then I did it, and now I haven't had I'm actually really excited to have another project, because it was almost like it was a little below my level, and I thought it would be
a little bit of an anticlimax
above. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, so maybe I'm like, maybe I thought it would be like a nice little postpartum, like, you know, climbing 514 again, and I was like, oh, I actually just did it quite quickly, and maybe I need to choose something harder now. So it's exciting, because I haven't really tested that yet. And now we're here, and I'm just, yeah, skiing and hangboarding.
Nice. And after this trip, you'll go back to Vegas?
I'm going to Argentina for 2 weeks. Yeah. Oh, nice. Well, I'm going to Argentina for 2 weeks to go sport climbing. That'll be my big trip. My like sponsor trip for the year, and then Adrian goes to Everest, and that's when I'm gonna go to Vegas, and maybe, and yeah, a quick trip to Yosemite. But primarily I'd like to find like a sport route to try in Vegas to have be like a more of a mega project.
And how will that work with Arrow when you, because you were saying you had like a three really dialed with a nanny, but obviously he'll be away. Do you have people that can kind of sub in for that three dynamic to work?
Yeah, so that's why I chose that area, is because, you know, Las Vegas has kind of become like the mecca of climbing in the U.S. at this point. And there's so many climbers that live there, and so many of our closest friends live there. And so myself and our nanny are going to go to Vegas for the spring. And then I have a lot of climbing partners lined up, and people who are, nice, you know, excited to either be a third, or I will leave Arrow with the nanny at home and then go climb for the day on specific days. So that's why I chose that, because, you know, I was talking to Maddie about all these goals, and she was kind of like, okay, but maybe you need something that's a little bit logistically easier. And that was when the light bulb went off in my head, and I was like, oh my God, she's so right. I should just like do something that is way easier. Like we have a place to live there. We don't have to live in the van. It's just going to be so much mellower, and there's so much climbing around there, and I have all these partners. I don't have to struggle with partners, and so I'm super excited, because I think it'll be really fun.
Yeah.
And I've never been excited for Adrian to go to Everest, so
yeah, I guess it's a balance, isn't it? Like, you can, so long as you have periods of time where like the logistics and the stress are all a bit like lower level, then you can do those pushes like Nepal, for example, where you're like,
yes,
this is going to be intense. There's lots to think about. There's lots to kind of navigate, but we can make it work. But if you were like doing that all year round, you'd probably like not have that much fun in the end, right?
Yeah, that's so actually such a good point. Got to do a bit of both. Yes, it's such a good point. Like, we need to have those like logistical challenges, just because I think it's fun and good to push ourselves in that way. But then, you know, when it's my time, when I want to like focus on my climbing, I also think I've learned that it's better when that logistics side is mellower, you know. Like, going to Nepal was kind of fun, because Adrian and I didn't have an objective. Like, we had no, and we've never gone to Nepal to just go walking. Like, the objective was to go hiking with our baby. So we like toned down the objective, because we knew that the logistics were going to be insurmountable, like might not have worked. So we couldn't have both. And I think that's it's a great point. Like, right now with a baby, it's like, you either have to have like a very easy logistics with like a big goal, or it has to be flip-flopped. Mm-hmm.
yeah no definitely. Oh, that's amazing. I'm conscious I've taken a lot of your time already, and we've covered loads of interesting stuff. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to discuss a little bit more? It's really interesting to hear another another perspective on motherhood and climbing and what that looks like. Because like we said at the beginning, it's so different for everyone and so different with different children and, you know, and as they age, it all changes. It's just like fascinating.
It's so fascinating. Yeah. And like, I think I'm most afraid, I guess the part like I'm most afraid about when he starts going to school, because I think that's actually when it's going to feel more restricting, because right now we can just go to Nepal. We can go, you know, when your kid's in school, it's going to be quite a bit different. I think Adrian and I aren't going to get to do as many trips together, and, you know, we're going to have to pick where we want to live, you know, because right now we kind of split our time between Vegas and Tahoe, and it's really nice balance. So that's, I think, our next like big challenge is that school age, where, you know, theoretically it's easier because you have more free time, but you're kind of like, for people like us who travel all the time, we're going to be locked down a little bit more. So, but we'll, you know, we'll just like everything, we just, it won't be perfect and we'll get through it. And
yeah,
you know, mostly it's all good and pretty fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I guess you just got to look at all these things as like new challenges and new ways to kind of figure out a slightly different picture of what things look like. I guess in the States as well, you have so much, you have a lot of choice of really cool places to live that have like multi-sport opportunities, or it seems like it from across the pond.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think especially out west, it's just like, there's so much and there's so much to do. It is quite, everything is quite far, which is kind of, I guess, the downfall.
Yeah.
Europe is, everything is really close in Europe. But yeah, we are really happy where we are, and it's been really good so far. So
nice. Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, it was a lovely chat. Thanks for having me.